Filippo and Miguel Nogueira are engineers. Special thanks to Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Miriam Barnard, Hugh Grant, David Prude, Ishmael Darrow. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, unless otherwise noted. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please join us.
Don't worry. I won't hurt you. I only want you to have some fun.
Dearly beloved.
Yes, come ride your bike and dance the night away on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m. as we celebrate Prince's birthday with a mobile bicycle dance party. Roll around Portland with Diablo as we rock Pedalpalooza, dropping the Prince jams all night long, stopping to dance along the way. Again, that's Prince's birthday celebration on Friday, June 7th at 8 p.m., beginning at his mural on 42nd and Prescott. More information can be found on the KBOO website under Community Events.
And good evening. It is 5:01, and coming up next we have KBOO Evening News. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Portland State University Hatfield School of Government, offering a master's degree in public administration for those who want to create efficient and inclusive cities, government agencies, and nonprofits. More information online at pdx.edu/Hatfield School.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the mobile workers movement is growing. We bring an update.
A school teacher in Texas used Twitter to ask President Donald Trump to remove all immigrant children from public schools. She thought it was a private message.
And in international news, law enforcement in Australia has raided two newsrooms to crack down on critical news coverage. Observers are describing it as, quote, savage.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. I'm Leslie McLamb.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. District Attorney Rod Underhill will not seek re-election in 2020, the Willamette Week reported today. Underhill has worked in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office for over 30 years, taking over from longtime DA Michael Schrunk 7 years ago. He has advocated for alternatives to prison time for low-level offenses and stopped criminal charges to people who didn't pay TriMet fares. On the flip side, he was hesitant to drop the Portland Police Department's 48-hour rule after police-involved shootings, barring interviews of officers until the time was up. Underhill's departure means for Multnomah County and Portland that two city council seats, the mayor's office and now the DA, are on the ballot for the 2020 election cycle.
It's been 9 years since 7-year-old Kyron Harmon disappeared from Skyline Elementary School in Portland. News reports from Harmon's mother, Desiree Young, indicate that authorities have narrowed the search for Kyron Harmon to less than 100 acres. The young boy's disappearance has baffled authorities, who continue to seek answers behind what caused him to vanish. Currently, the search for Kyron is the largest effort to find person Oregon's history. Over the course of the 9-year investigation, no traces of Kyron have been found, and there have been no reported suspects or arrests in the case. Kyron disappeared after his stepmother, Terry Moulton Harmon, brought him to school early on the morning of June 4, 2010. He was never seen again. Moulton Harmon denies being involved in the disappearance. The Multnomah County Sheriff's Office asks anyone with information about Kyren's disappearance to contact its tip line at 503-261-2847.
The Florida officer on duty during the Parkland High School shooting was indicted on 11 criminal charges yesterday relating to his inaction, which contributed to the deaths of 17 people. The deputy, Scott Peterson, had knowledge of an armed individual on the loose in the school and neglected to enter the premises to confront the gunman. Peterson was seen on a surveillance video rushing toward the building when shots were first fired, but remained outside with his gun drawn. After the shooting, Peterson claimed under oath that he did not hear any shots fired after taking his position outside of the school. Surveillance footage disproved this statement. Peterson has been formally charged with child neglect, culpable negligence, and perjury. The allegations carry a potential prison sentence of up to 100 years. The charges come after a 14-month investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Officials there said in a statement, quote, "There can be no excuse for his complete inaction and no question that his inaction cost lives," end quote. The perpetrator, 20-year-old Nicholas Cruz, is facing the death penalty if convicted of the first-degree murder charges he faces as a result of the attack.
June is Pride Month for the LGBTQ community, but a group in Boston called Super Happy Fun America is making waves after applying to the city government for permits to hold a straight pride march in August. The approval is currently pending. The group's vice president, Mark Sahady, claims that the organization intends to advocate on behalf of the straight community after filing a discrimination complaint with the city. Sahady is a member of the right-wing group Resist Marxism, which hosted a pro-gun protest to counter the March for Our Lives events that took place last year. On the organization's website, the group's president, John Hugo, is quoted as saying, quote, "Straight people are an oppressed majority. We will fight for straights everywhere." In the last 24 hours, there have been over 45,000 tweets about the event, a majority of them expressing outrage. Many Twitter users have pointed out that the flawed logic behind the straight parade, commenting, quote, "Every day is a straight pride parade." Boston is a historically LGBT-friendly city, with the state of Massachusetts being the first to legalize same-sex marriage in 2004. Boston's mayor, Marty Walsh, a Democrat, issued a statement in support of the LGBT community when asked if he supported the straight pride parade. Walsh responded by encouraging Bostonians to attend the city's gay pride parade on Saturday to, quote, "fight for progress and equality for all," end quote.
A Republican mayor of a small Alabama town is facing backlash after writing on Facebook that the only way to solve the country's problems is by killing members of the LGBTQ community. Mark Chambers, the mayor of Carbon Hill, Alabama, said, quote, "without killing them out, there's no way to fix it," end quote. Chambers now says that his comments were taken out of context and that he was under the impression it was a private message rather than a public post. Chambers' comments are not the only ones in the past week from lawmakers referencing the murdering of members of the LGBTQ community. In a separate incident this week, Mike Hill, a Republican representative from Pensacola, Florida, was recorded laughing and refusing to push back on a question about whether or not he'd introduce legislation for the execution of homosexuals. Both Mayor Chambers and Representative Hill are refusing to step down from office despite being called upon by colleagues and constituents to do so.
Georgia Clark, an English teacher in Fort Worth, Texas, has been fired for asking Trump via Twitter to remove immigrant children from schools. Clark, who said she did not realize her tweets were public, described the Fort Worth school district as, quote, "loaded with illegal students from Mexico." Clark also tweeted publicly that she wanted Trump to protect her anonymity to prevent retaliation for whistleblowers. The local school board voted unanimously to terminate Clark's contract, citing the desire to treat all 86,000 Fort Worth students with dignity and respect. The group, Fort Worth Republican Women, criticized the move, calling it unfair that a teacher was disciplined for, quote, "asking the president to enforce the law." But as the law stands, all children in the U.S. are entitled to a public education, and that right cannot be denied by a sitting president.
YouTube announced today that it will be changing its community guidelines. The corporation says it will specifically prohibit videos that allege a group's superiority in order to justify discrimination, segregation, or exclusion based on qualities like age, gender, race, caste, religion, sexual orientation, or veteran status. The company says it will also remove content denying well-documented violent events like the Holocaust or the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting. The change to the company's hate speech policy will result in the removal of videos that contain content like the glorification and spread of Nazi ideology, which is inherently discriminatory. In addition, YouTube claims it will expand its efforts to reduce the amount of promotion videos that spread, quote, borderline content and harmful misinformation. YouTube says the initiative, which began in January, has already decreased the number of views of videos of this sort by 50%. A month ago, YouTube removed several content creators on the basis of the spread of hate speech, like the conspiracy theorist and founder of InfoWars, Alex Jones. But is the new policy too little too late? The company has received immense criticism for neglecting to control the spread of hateful and false content on the platform in the past. Many worry that YouTube will not be able to adequately enforce the new policies.
A police raid on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation is being described as chilling and outrageous, with one editor claiming he'd, quote, never seen an assault on the media so savage. Officers arrived at the public broadcaster's Sydney headquarters this morning with search warrants against two reporters and the news director. The warrants pertain to articles released by ABC in 2017, which alleged unlawful killings and misconduct by Australian forces in Afghanistan. Broadcasters claim that the articles were based on hundreds of pages of secret defense documents leaked to the ABC. The Australian Federal Police responded by saying the warrants were in relation to the publication of classified materials. ABC has defended its actions, stating that the news outlet has remained independent and impartial at all times. The raid has been met with public condemnation by media outlets, human rights groups, and the leading journalist union in Australia. ABC Managing Director David Anderson said the police raid, quote, raises legitimate concerns over freedom of the press.
In a separate but equally concerning event, an Australian journalist named Annika Smethurst's home was raided by the Australian Federal Police on Tuesday morning. The AFP said the search warrant was part of an ongoing investigation into the alleged leaking of classified information. A spokesperson for the press gallery in Parliament called the raid a, quote, outrageous move that should concern all Australians who value their freedom in an open society. Smethurst, the national politics editor of the Sunday Telegraph, reported that Australia's Home and Defence Ministries were discussing expanding the powers of the Australian Signals Directorate. According to Smethurst, the Cyber Intelligence Agency could access the emails, bank records, and text messages of Australian citizens with the approval of the ministry without a warrant. Her report included images from a top-secret document. The recent raids have struck fear in the heart of Australian journalists, many of them fearing that these developments will affect their ability to carry out their jobs. Reporters claim the raids are representative of something that would be expected in an authoritarian country.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report. At 6, it's Project Censored. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, mostly cloudy with showers, getting down to 48 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be partly sunny with showers. Highs will be around 63 degrees. Today in history. In 1794, Congress passed the Neutrality Act, which prohibited Americans from taking part in any military action against a country that was at peace with the United States. The quote of the day is from General George C. Marshall, who said, "If a man does find the solution for world peace, it will be the most revolutionary reversal of his record we have ever known." We'll be right back.
Atmospheric carbon dioxide levels reached a record high in May, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. The agency measured a jump of 3.5 parts per million this past month, making the May 2019 calculations more than 414 parts per million, an unprecedented number. Scientists with the agency say that they have zero doubt that human carbon emissions are the reason for this spike.
Civilians provided chilling details that indicate members of the paramilitary known as the Rapid Support Force were roaming the streets of the Sudanese capital, Khartoum, and attacking civilians following a violent crackdown on pro-democracy protests in the city. 40 bodies have been pulled from the Nile River. The bodies were among the estimated 100 people killed since forces attacked protest camps on Monday. Many of the bodies had been beaten, shot, or hacked to death before being thrown in the river. In addition, reports indicate that members of the RSF were shutting down hospitals to prevent injured civilians from receiving treatment. A woman who identified herself only as Sulaima told the BBC, quote, "They're surrounding our neighborhoods. They're threatening people. They're using live ammunition. They're everywhere. We're not safe. It's complete chaos." The events perpetrated by the Sudanese Military Council has been described as a massacre.
A Mexican diplomatic delegation is headed to the White House to negotiate Trump's planned 5% tariff on all goods from Mexico. Trump blames the Mexican government for not taking enough action to stem the flow of immigrants entering the United States without documentation. Trump is trying to pressure Mexico to take in all asylum seekers, secure its border with Guatemala, and tighten checkpoints for migrants within Mexico. Trump plans to put the tariffs into effect beginning Monday. The movement to organize mobile delivery workers continues. KBOO's Leslie McClam has more.
In the continuing coverage of gig workers speaking out against how the app delivery companies they work for operate, I would like to share with you the words of an Instacart shopper. We will call MC to protect their privacy and edited for clarity and explicit content. MC describes the experience that began to highlight the difference in how the company markets its services to the drivers who do the shopping versus the customers who place the orders. My first order of the day is a 125 order with less than 2 miles of driving. It has a 20-plus payout, including tip. Sweet deal. I can't tell what the item is until I start shopping, and I realize that it is 25 bags of mulch that weigh 40 pounds each. I noticed when I took the batch, it was this guy's first time ordering, so I think, alrighty, let's do this thing, and I'll chat with this guy and see what his deal is. I go to the garden where the cashier is painstakingly types in 25 bags of mulch. Apparently, she can't do a quantity. So later I pull up to the area where they keep the bark and the mulch, and the guys look at me like I'm nuts, but I say, get in as many as you can. I'm planning on having to come back. We fit in 16 bags, and I drive 5 minutes to the customer's house. The customer comes out and sees this mom of two with my crummy four-door sedan, full to the rafters with 600 pounds of mulch. His jaw drops, and he says, I was expecting two men in a delivery truck. I started to explain gig work, third-party contractors, and the whole shady business of how these companies really work. He said, that's not how Instacart advertises it at all on their website. They encourage people to order heavy stuff, right off the website even. I agree with him and tell him how Costco even makes it difficult for people to tip, that Fred Meyer says not to tip shoppers on their website, and this poor guy was totally shaken. He said, this isn't right. How much do you get paid? I told him the Instacart payout, and he went silent. I did have to run back to the store to grab those last 9 bags of mulch that were 40 pounds each. When I returned, he handed me some cash, and he shook my hand. At the end of the day, it was a great interaction, and I'm really happy I took it, even though the whole thing was a mess.
The movement to organize mobile delivery workers
continues. Tonight, live in the studio, we have Insta-shopper Heidi with us to help explain why this movement is important, especially with the company that she works for, Instacart. Thank you for being here tonight, Heidi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Heidi, can you give us a brief summary of what an Instacart shopper does?
We get offered a batch, and what that means is they send us a notice through the app, and it starts pinging. And when we get that, we can kind of scroll through. We look at the address. Most of us look up the address to find out who the customer might be, how far it is, that sort of thing. We can scroll through and kind of see the items, but they're super tiny. We drive through the store, and then we slide to start shopping, and we grocery shop just like you would grocery shop for yourself. We do our best to pick out the best produce, cans that aren't dented, boxes that aren't crushed. We do all of that, and then we head to checkout, and they check us out. I personally bag all the customers' groceries. I like the way that I do it. I'm very particular. I want cold with coal. I want stuff put in bags like you'd put it into your counter. And then we drive it to the house. We unload the groceries there. It's supposed to be store to door. Many times customers are elderly, had new babies, had surgery, whatever, and they would like us to bring them inside. I personally many times will do that, but if my gut is telling me no, and that can then I don't, and that can get our tips taken away. It can mess with our ratings, which messes with our ability to get things.
So what kind of order would be like an average order that you've done before?
It kind of that varies a lot right now. I dodge a lot of things. I skip a lot. I cherry pick really hard because I have to make sure that I'm actually making money, not paying to work. And when I figure in gas, wear and tear on my car, the time that it's going to take me from wherever I am to get to the store and then do the store and then to the customer. If I'm not making at least minimum wage after all of that, then I'm not going to do it.
So how many miles might that be? I mean, might you drive on an average order?
Personally, I don't drive more than 5 miles. It has to be really good, and I'll go up to 10 miles, but it has to be really good.
How many bags do you say you might carry, like, on average? Like, do you think an order is normally about maybe 3 bags, or do you get maybe, like, 10?
It kind of depends. Today I did one, and I actually have some information here in front of me. It was 5 cases of LaCroix and 6 bags of groceries and a 12-pack of soda.
So how much did that earn you today? How much did you make for that kind of order?
That earned me, not including the tip, $15.35.
What kind of difference would that order have gotten you under the different pay scale?
Under the old pay plan, it would have, before tip, would have been $27.30.
And you want to explain what this pay scale change is all about for people who have never heard of it before?
In the past, we were paid a delivery commission, and that varied on the day of the week, anywhere from $3 up to $4, depending on the day of the week. And then a per-item commission, which was 40 cents per item. And then, depending, if we did a club order, like for Costco, there was an extra $5.50 added. If the order came to over $200, there was an extra $5 there. And that, so I used the numbers based on the order that I did today.
That sounds like a lot of nice incentives that they used to have.
Absolutely.
They still have those kinds of incentives now?
No.
What sort of incentives are they offering now?
None. heavy item pay in some instances, but you kind of have to fight for it, which I did on the order today because of the number of cases of LaCroix. I had to call in. Well, that took time out of my time. It should have been a given already.
What is a heavy item? I mean, is that a gallon of milk? Is that a 12-pack of soda? Is that a 40-pound bag of mulch? What's a heavy item?
It's actually all three of those. Anything that weighs over 8 pounds, and then you have to have a combination of over 8-pound items that comes to at least 49 pounds. They only pay up to 150 pounds, and that would be a $15 bump.
And that bump is that one of those wonderful incentives that they used to be offering.
We didn't ever get heavy item pay before. We got large order bumps based on how much it costs and where we shopped. And if we went over here in Portland, if we went over 14 miles for delivery, we got another bump.
So it sounds like they used to have a variety of different ways to help you earn extra money, all these different incentives that you could add together and really earn well. And now they've reduced it to maybe just this one bump. is this new version you're sending, you're saying is the incentive.
And you kind of have to fight for
it.
And you have to fight for it.
So how does this impact gig workers like yourself and other Insta shoppers?
I can hardly afford to do it anymore. I don't leave my house for, I mean, why would I leave my house to shop for an hour for $10?
How do you think this is affecting the customers, especially those that are familiar with you, that you aren't able to take their orders anymore because it's not affordable?
I've been lucky in that people are pretty understanding. We do have customers that will, when they place their order, they will tip 22 cents, and that's an indication that they know what's going on and that they will tip afterwards, either with cash or through the app.
So you want to explain that a little bit? If they know what's going on, how do our listeners know what that 22 cents is all about? Is that an action being taken?
It's something that we started with customers, that we started passing along to customers, letting them know that our pay was being changed and that they were using their tips that meant to come to us as a way of paying our base fee. And if they paid a small amount, then the base fee would be higher. They've since changed the pay again, so that's not happening. But the 22 cents, when you place your order, tells shoppers, we know what's going on, we support you 100%, and we're gonna tip you after delivery.
That's a pretty nice action for customers to take, to stand together. Are there any other kinds of actions?
We're working with the Pay Up campaign, which is working with a lot of gig workers throughout, you know, all of us that do gig work. We're kind of focusing on DoorDash. Postmates, sorry. I get them all mixed up because I do all of them. We're talking to legislators. We're trying to get legislation passed that protects gig workers. I feel like the gig workers of today are the factory workers of the last century, and we're the ones being exploited. And people are benefiting from our hard labor, and we take pride in this. Every shopper that I know loves what we do and takes pride in it. And it's hard to do that. It's hard to get up every morning and say, okay, here's another one. They want to pay me $8. To work for an hour and a half based on driving and delivering. And if you do it right, it's going to take time.
Right. So how can listeners find out more and get on board with you and help you build this movement?
There are groups on Reddit, which are fantastic. I don't know how to do Reddit very well, but I've read them. Twitter. On Facebook, there's the Pay Up campaign, and talking to shoppers, talking to people. If you see somebody in the store, if you have deliveries, all of this, ask them about it. Ask your shopper how this is affecting them. Ask what you can do to help.
I have a question. I'm
sure.
Going to jump in. So I'm curious, you know, we keep hearing how great the economy's doing and all that, and there's so many jobs and this and that. And so I'm curious if you have a sense as to why all this is changing. Is the market just flooded with gig workers? Is it just because they can? What's your sense?
I believe that what the gig companies are trying to do is to set things up for their IPOs so that they look more profitable than they really are. And they're doing that by cutting our wages. And we're the faces of their company. They would be nothing without us. And it's about greed. It's corporate greed. And that's what it boils down to. And yes, the economy may be doing so great, and unemployment is an all-time low, and this, that, and the other. Gig workers do this because for one reason or another, we can't work regular jobs, or we need more than one job.
And so we have about 2 minutes left. If you don't mind, I'll just jump in with one more question. I'm curious, so what would it sounds like the deal's getting worse and worse. So what would it take, really quickly, apparently we just have about 30 seconds, what would it take for you to leave? Does it have to get a whole lot worse than this, or are you kind of already at the edge?
I'm right at the edge.
Okay.
I'm working on other things to be able to do what I enjoy doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much,
Heidi. Thank you for having us.
That was Heidi, our Insta shopper, magnificent. And we'd like to thank you for listening to KBOO.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, June 5th, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Kenzie Beard, Christopher Brown, and Kathy Seitz. The producer is Lisa Loving, and our engineer is David Kesters. The interim director of Evening News and Public Affairs is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Erin J. Bernard.
And I'm Leslie McLam. Thank you.
Now it's time for News from the Boo, the weekly segment from people inside of and around KBOO with news from your community radio station.
Peace, good people. I am your host, Mike Crenshaw, bringing you this bi-weekly segment, News from the Boo. And you know, we usually talk about news from in and around the KBOO community, and oftentimes you'll hear me talking about news that's